from Directions Media. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, October 5th, 2010. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica in Huntsville, Alabama.
This week, we run down some of the recent Google mapping news and try to tease out what it tells us about where that company is going with geospatial. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Erdos, the Earth to Business company. Get ready to leverage your available hardware with multi-core distributed processing and Erdos Imagine and LPS and clustering in Erdos Apollo. Customize and localize software interfaces, exploit base imagery and geocoding in Bing Maps, and easily link to Google Earth. Utilize new image analysis workflows specifically designed for defense and intelligence users. Erdos 2011 software release is coming soon. Visit www.erdos.com for more information on this exciting release.
Now, there were five little news tidbits that I picked out from last week regarding Google's mapping and geospatial efforts. There are probably more. Google, like many other organizations currently involved in geospatial, is coming at it from so many different directions, it's hard to keep up, frankly. But let me just run down these five little news stories, and then we can share what those make us think about in terms of what Google is on about with geospatial. So one of the big news tidbits was that Street View service was extended to Brazil, Ireland, and Antarctica, giving it a presence on all seven continents. And as Ed Parsons of Google noted in an interview, that gives you the opportunity to visit places you normally don't. Google was also in the news because of some research on the Android operating system, and I'm going to quote CNET here. Specifically, the researchers found that 2/3 of the 30 apps in the sample used sensitive data suspiciously. Half share location data with advertising or analytics servers without requiring implicit or explicit user consent. And 1/3 expose the device ID, sometimes with the phone number and the SIM card serial number. In all, the researchers said they found 68 instances of potential misuse of users' private information across 20 applications, unquote. And those are Android applications. I also found an interesting article on Greater Washington. That's a blog about the Washington, D.C. area, which I really enjoy. And the readers of Greater Washington had been looking at some new imagery on Google Maps and were using their brain power to determine exactly when that imagery was taken based on what was there and what wasn't there. This week it was announced that the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the NGA, had entered into a contract with Google for $26 million for geospatial visualization enterprise services. And finally, on the mobile ads front, it is now possible to put together an ad such that the ad will tell the viewer of the ad how far the individual is from the vendor represented in the ad if that user shares their location information. So those are sort of all over the place in terms of new data, in terms of privacy topics, in terms of advertising, and in terms of services that Google provides. So looking at all these, Joe, what kind of ideas or conclusions can you draw?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is, and this is kind of the wrapping up the whole idea of what Google has done recently, is a continued investment in the platform and the data. We had recognized maybe a while ago that some of the imagery wasn't updated always. It seemed to be 2, sometimes 3 years behind. These moves all point to the fact that Google is continuing their investment. And specifically, I think most of these little news bits seem to point to that they're trying to get to the very last mile, at least a few of these news items do, the kind of the last, what I would call the last mile of advertising. They're bringing the user right down to the individual retailer, whoever that may be, and giving them the information for proximity to that retailer, bringing the consumer into kind of the proximity, the proximal space of that retailer, so that they can get there as quick as possible, and that the retailer can recognize a return on investment if they're advertising with Google Ads.
I guess you could make the same argument about Street View, that that's taking you to the last mile, the last level of zooming, I think one of the Google folks referred to it as you zoom into the world, that you can actually see the street or the penguins if you're in Antarctica, for example.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, you know, follows on to the fact that, again, continuing to invest on all continents, getting more Street View imagery. And that kind of brings up my other big trend here from these news items, which is the privacy issues. I think Google is clearly tiptoeing around each country's privacy laws to accommodate where necessary. And I spent some time on Google Street View to see what improvements they've made to protect privacy. And they're clearly fuzzing out faces, for example. Anybody who's caught on camera now, is you just can't really tell. The resolution isn't that good, and where it is pretty good, if you get close enough, they've fuzzed out the faces. And I think that was mentioned by Ed Parsons, that the technology now allows them to continue to capture Street View imagery and then degrade the imagery necessary to that privacy is maintained.
I also sort of keyed in on this data capture issue, and I think that it's interesting to look at that in the context of how Google describes itself. Google describes itself as a company that is working to organize the world's information and make it useful. Well, I think it needs to add to that, it is also creating the information.
Yeah.
And so as much as we think of Google as sort of an internet company or a search company or a services company, it's also a data company. And you could think about this, not only is it going out and capturing data for Street View and using crowdsourcing for the Map Maker application and providing a platform for blogging so people can create content that the company can then organize, but it's also making data in the sense of finding out the distance from you to the retailer, as you suggested. So it's making new data that it can then make more useful and provide to advertisers to make it, you know, more valuable. So it's sort of this stacking up of not only organizing the information, but actually creating the information.
That's true, but what we still can't do with the data is manipulate it in any way. And I wonder if that's the next stage that Google is going to take this, take the data and allow users more interactivity with it. Right now, it is providing the information that it deems necessary, not necessarily that the user deems necessary, making it very easy for the person who's doing the search, but not necessarily letting you do anything with the data as other data companies have done. In other words, it's not exposing the data in any way that will allow you to manipulate it, analyze it in any form.
Right. Well, and that's a really subtle but important point, that it's a data capture company, but it's less of a data provider. It provides it in a very limited and controlled way.
Yeah, and I've often wondered out loud to a few people whether at some point, and this takes, for example, the satellite imagery, whether we'll be at some point allowed to manipulate the imagery, classify it, do change detection, just as the Greater Washington blog tried to do manually. You know, they tried to tease out what changes were made from the previous image capture to what they, I guess, assumed was taken on August 29th there. So, but we still can't manipulate the data.
That does fall under this organizing the world's information to make it useful. That's sort of another part of the making it useful part. So I guess that's certainly within what Google describes as its mission, at least to this point.
Well, and I think that's a good point, is that, you know, if we're going to organize the world's data, then allow the individual user to do something with it and maybe create back for Google to expose to other users. And maybe that's coming.
We'll have to keep our eyes open. The other theme that I drew out of this is that I think we can't forget that while many of us in the professional space in geospatial technologies tries to think of Google as being in a different kind of space, supporting a different kind of user, more of a consumer perhaps or a business than sort of the professional Department of Transportation or a local government that we're much more familiar with. But I think it's important to note that Google is getting into some of these other spaces sort of quietly and carefully. I don't think anybody's surprised that the NGA has a contract with Google. but exactly what's being done there and what services it's providing that might have been provided by another one of the well-known companies that, we're familiar with is unclear. Google is starting to sort of dip in its big toe into that space and start pulling some of the money from that space. And the other example I want to give is in the education space. While Google is very much involved in the formal education space, it's got a lot of tools that it provides for educators to use Google Earth and lesson planning and all that sort of thing. But if you think about it, what's happening at Greater Washington is sort of this informal education where people are sort of spending their free time puzzling out what's changed so we can figure out exactly when that photograph was taken. And that kind of educating is at least as important as the formal kind. And I'm very pleased to see that kind of activity being done sort of for fun. And that's the kind of thing that I think educators should jump on. That don't use anything formal that might be provided. Try to do something like this in your classroom.
I'm not sure I would have characterized Google as coming into the government space quietly and carefully. I would have termed it kicking and screaming because of the fact I think that their original intent was not necessarily to get into the government space, especially working with the NGA. What I have seen historically is that there were opportunities that I think that Google was dragged into because others saw the potential of using that as a platform.
And you're thinking of Bristol, Alabama, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so now we see a very large contract by NGA for visualization. And I think it really goes to the point that for a long time, you know, ever since Google Earth came out, we were seeing this as a tremendous opportunity to see things in a different way, and it almost became the de facto visualization platform for many people, because all we had to say, you know, when we tried to describe geospatial applications, we say, well, you know Google Earth, right? And everybody has seen Google Earth. And I think what's happening is now this is a platform of choice for visualization for many things. And I also like to pick up on your point of exposing geography to more people, like the folks at Greater Washington, because it's a very populist movement in geography, I guess is maybe the way to describe it. Without doing much, we are now educating more people. Google is educating more people in image interpretation, for example. And that's a fantastic consequence of what Google has done.
Right. And just to clarify, when I said carefully and quietly, I meant that in the context of the press. I honestly didn't see the mention of that contract anywhere in the geospatial press. So I don't think, so if Google is shouting it from the rooftops or the NGA is, we the geospatial community maybe are not tuned into that. That was sort of what I was trying to comment on.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, that's all the time we have.
This podcast was brought to you by ERDOS, the Earth to Business Company. Backed by more than 30 years of experience working with geospatial data and expert users like you, ERDOS allows you to harness the information of the changing Earth for greater advantage. Find out more about ERDOS and the ERDOS 2011 software release at www.erdos.com.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a comment at Directions Magazine.
I'd also like to remind you that Rocket City Geospatial Conference this November 16 and 17 has a call for papers. We're still accepting a few more. If you'd like to contribute to the conference, you can do so by going to the website at rocketcitygeospatial.com.
Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.